Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us from the website SC, as in South Carolina, encyclopedia.org and southwritlarge.com. Since we're now midsummer in North Carolina, let's explore beach music. Question number one. When was the music referred to as beach music first recognized? Was that A, in the late 1920s, early 1930s? Was it B, in the late 1940s and early 1950s? Was it C, in the mid-1970s? Or was it D, about 1988? Beach music, when was it first recognized as such? And question number two, which of the following is documented as the legend about beach music? Is it A, on the 4th of July, the great shaggers would put on cashmere sweaters, dance up a storm, and never break a sweat? Or was it B, the best beach music dancers could put a key lime pie on top of their head, do a drop spin, and never crack the crust? Or was it C, beach music enthusiasts would sometimes shout the lyrics to the song Louie Louie, regardless of the song played by the DJs at the jump joints? Or was it D, all of the above are documented as legends about beach music? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of July 15th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1954 that the first Newport Jazz Festival was held at the Newport Casino in Newport, Rhode Island, 1954 today. And it was 42 years ago today, 1980, that Linda Ronstadt made her dramatic debut in The Pirates of Penzance at the New York Shakespeare Festival in Central Park, 1980 today. And in country music news, we have this article written by Robert Love in AARP, the magazine, July 2022 issue, entitled Big Country. The all-American musical style has grown and changed along with the nation. It's time we paid tribute to this vibrant and still evolving art form. Country music was on the record player in our home, but it had to fight for its turn. With five kids raised on rock and roll and, yes, one stereo music, often sparked a family feud. My family father was a big fan of country and western, as it was called back then, and eventually I became one too. But we arrived at our uneasy alliance after traveling different roads. My dad, a World War II veteran, loved Eddie Arnold, the Tennessee Plowboy. Starting in 1945, Arnold released a series of sweet, earnest recordings for a war-weary greatest generation. Later, as country shrugged off its hillbilly past and got sophisticated, the plowboy turned crossover crooner found his biggest audience with hits such as Make the World Go Away, released in 1965. This lovely record was published to a sheen by Nashville studio geniuses who layered on strings and backup singers. That style later evolved into slick, country-politan, easy listening music that I sneered at. As unfair as this youthful judgment was, Arnold scored 92 top 10 hits and 28 at number one, and he was honored in 2008 as Billboard's number one country artist of all time. To me, he was strictly Squaresville. I found my country on the hippie folk rock trail. The Beatles, great appreciators of American culture, were devotees of twang. On the Help soundtrack album, Ringo Starr covered a Buck Owens song, Act Naturally, and George Harrison played the solo on his Gretsch Tennessean guitar. 5 years later, the Grateful Dead's classic album, Working Man's Dead, convinced me to go out and buy a five-string banjo and to fall in love with the Foggy Mountain Boys and bluegrass. It's funny how age broadened our musical taste, and it wasn't too long before I could listen respectfully to Eddie Arnold, while my father could hum Beatles tunes. In this issue, we're doing our first ever tribute to country music. The package starts on page 34 and features interviews with top country stars and famous fans like Ringo. As you'll see, our point here is country today is big and wide with deep roots in our American story. It has evolved mightily from its dual origins in southern blues and mountain music. A big bang of immigrant, native, and African-American cultures. Along the way, it spun off folk, bluegrass, outlaw, alt-western swing, and modern radio-friendly Nashville, as well as Johnny, Dolly, Willie, Garth, and other icons who have forged their own brands. As our country rolls on, country has grown more diverse. The biggest-selling country single of all time is Lil Nas X's duet with Billy Ray Cyrus, Old Town Road. Lil Nas X is a young, gay, African-American of great talent and drive, and he's just one of the acts who are making this big, welcoming, and fully American art form bigger and more welcoming. Kane Brown is another artist emerging from this new generation. Time magazine named the biracial singer one of the most influential people in the world in 2021. Brown told us that he foresees a bright future for country music. People are opening their eyes, ears, and hearts, he says. As another barrier breaker, fellow country artist Darius Rucker has said, Kane is setting the bar so high for the next generation. I hope kids see him and now think, I can do that. And in classical music news, we have this article titled, Lately We've Read. This is published in WCPE's Quarter Notes, Summer 2022. And it's a review written by Gracelyn Hyman. It's titled, Who is Florence Price? Young musicians tell the story of a girl and her music. Whether you do or don't know who Florence Price is, you will appreciate this unique book when you read it. The authors and illustrators of this charming, informative, and inspirational book are middle school students at the Special Music School, a collaboration between the Kaufman Music Center and New York City's Department of Education. Their enthusiasm for their subject shines through the pages of this book. They clearly admire all of Mrs. Price's efforts and have her first symphony performed despite prejudice against her gender and race. She finally succeeded in 1933 with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra performing her Symphony No. 1 at the World's Fair. Providing students with an example of talent and determination, conquering adversity. There is an emphasis on the value of hard work throughout this book. The text is easily accessible to children, but is also at a level that adults can enjoy reading. Her story is told as an answer to the question, who is Florence Price? This question arises when a couple buys a house outside of Chicago in 2009 and find boxes of yellow sheet music by Ms. Price. In addition to the children's narrative, there is a biography of Ms. Price. The biography includes photographs, but frustratingly, there is one group picture that does not indicate which of the 16 people in it is the composer. There is also a list of selected works and questions to stimulate discussion, and they're included. A particularly appealing feature is the yellowed first page of her Violin Concerto No. 2 on the inside cover and last page of the book. The revival of the beautiful music of Florence Price has been a gift to classical music and to the world. This book is also a gift in a larger sense, providing optimism about the youth of today and the future of classical music. It would make an ideal gift for a child in your life and belongs in the collection of every public school and music library. And also in Music Research and Technology is this article about a somewhat legendary musical instrument built at a king's command. According to the author of this article, Maddie Shaw Roberts, published in the July 8, 2022 issue of ClassicFM.com, this new instrument was made of live hogs and was built in 15th century France at the direction of King Louis XI, who was nicknamed the Universal Spider, and as the king who trusted no one and spied on both his enemies and his own kingdom. The instrument, called the Piganino, earned a stream of satirical nicknames from the Hog Harmonium to the Porco Forte. King Louis, thinking it impossible, challenged an abbot to build an organ of live pigs that would provide a concert of swine's voices for his entertainment. Turns out the abbot was both an accomplished inventor of musical instruments and also knowledgeable about pig breeds. The abbot won the challenge by creating a keyboard device on which each key was connected to a prong which poked the rump of a live pig, causing it to squeal. Each pig was positioned according to size and age to guarantee an ascending melody line. Hence, the monstrous new organ, nicknamed the Swineway, was born. Fortunately, this time period also saw the birth of many musical instruments that are still loved and played today, including the lute, recorder, and everyone's favorite, the hurdy-gurdy, otherwise known as the zanfona. And in rock and pop music news, we have this article entitled Walter Scott's Personality, published in Parade magazine on the 4th of July, 2021. In this issue, he's asking Gene Simmons, the bassist and co-founder of the group Kiss, 72, is the subject of the two-part documentary put out in 2021, biography, Kiss Story. He and musical partner Paul Stanley reveal the stories behind their success, full five decades in one of rock's most outrageous bands. Walter Scott asks, what was the most important thing for you in making Kiss Story? Well, we wanted to stay true to the vibe and the culture that we're all about. Our mandate has always been, we're apolitical. Don't go looking for meaning. Don't give us gravitas. Don't make us seem more than what we are. We've always been about putting on the best show, and that's it. Will people learn anything surprising? Well, they'll be surprised that we're normal, boring guys. Despite what people may think, I've actually never been drunk or high in my life. Never smoked cigarettes. People might be surprised. I thought he worshipped the devil and sacrificed children. Nope, don't do any of those things. I like cookies, I watch cartoons, and I love my family. My reasoning is I never wanted to disappoint my mother. She was in a concentration camp in Nazi Germany when she was 14 years of age. The most horrific life you can imagine for anybody. My mother lived to be 93. After all she'd been through, I could never imagine breaking her heart. Why would Kiss retire? Well, the last thing you want to do is to stay on stage too long. We introduced ourselves with, you one of the best, you got the best, the hottest band in the world. We should not stray on that stage a day longer, not a show longer, than when those words are true. Earl Scruggs' Foggy Mountain Breakdown introduces our local music news. These are your music festivals in North Carolina for your summer must-do list. This is written by Kimberly Castellella and Brooke Kane in News and Observer on the 29th of June, 2022. Summer music festivals feed our love of music and our need to be outside, communing with others when the weather's nice. And by nice, we mean warm, or even hot, but no rain, please. Toss in the fact that most of our picks here for the best summer music festivals in North Carolina also come with an extra element like arts, crafts, dance, and of course, food and beer. And the experience can be pretty close to perfect. We need to stick to festivals that we're in, or at least pretty close to the Triangle, but there's one new one on the scene that will require a bit of a road trip, but we think it's worth it. What is it? Earl Scruggs Music Festival. When? September 2nd through the 4th. Where? Mill Spring. Go for information at earlscruggsmusicfestival.com. What's it all about? This one is close to a four-hour drive from Raleigh, but if you love bluegrass, folk, and Americana music, it's worth it. This brand-new festival, this is the first year, is a tribute to bluegrass banjo 11 Earl Scruggs, and is put on by the Earl Scruggs Center and the WMCW-FM. Tip, take the whole week off and enjoy Asheville and the North Carolina mountains while you're there. Performers at this event include Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, the Earls of Leicester, Sam Bush Band, Bella Flex, My Bluegrass Heart, Allison Brown, Molly Tuttle and Golden Highway, Chatham County Line, Reese Palmer, Jerry Douglas, Balsam Range, Lakota John, Chatham Rabbits, Fireside Collective, Bella White, and many, many others. And coming up soon after that is the North Carolina Folk Fest on September 9th through the 11th in downtown Greensboro. If you're short on funds after the Earl Scruggs extravaganza, this three-day music festival in Greensboro, which is much closer than Mill Spring, is free to attend. The festival features not only folk musicians, but also Afrobeats, Cajun, funk, country, indie rock, and more. The festival boasts more than 300 artists on multiple stages with continuous performances. And if you like bluegrass, don't forget that Raleigh hosts the annual International Bluegrass Music Association Festival coming up this year on September 30th through October 1 at the Red Hat Amphitheater in downtown Raleigh. Billed as the largest free urban bluegrass festival in the world, downtown Raleigh's IBMA Bluegrass Live event features IBMA and Grammy Award-winning bluegrass artists on street stages throughout the Raleigh area. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, when was the music referred to as beach music first recognized? Was it A, in the late 1920s, early 1930s? Was it B, in the late 1940s, early 1950s? Was it C, in the mid-70s? Or D, about 1988? Correct answer? Answer B, late 40s, early 50s. As noted in an article published in scencyclopedia.org, simply titled Beach Music, beach music, as it is known on the South, originated in the coastal Carolinas in the years following World War II. The term referred to African-American, quote-unquote, race music, later called rhythm and blues, or R&B, that could be found in South Carolina only on jukeboxes, in the beachside jump joints, and saloons. Most regional radio broadcasters refused to play this music. Some stations proudly advertised that it aired, quote-unquote, no jungle music. The quote-unquote race recordings were mostly sold by mail order. However, along the coast, the decline of big band swing prompted young white dancers to seek out alternative music. George Lineberry, one of the young white dancers who worked for a local amusements company in Myrtle Beach until 1948, took it upon himself to install race records on jukeboxes in white establishments, including the popular Oceanfront Pavilion in the heart of the tourist district. Lineberry chose records that he and his friends had discovered on visits to black nightclubs. Because it was mostly heard at the beach, this exciting, hard-to-find new music genre became known to white visitors as beach music. In later years, a tamer version of the music grew in popularity as it became associated with the popular shag dance, now South Carolina's official dance. And in 2001, beach music, without a firm definition, was designated South Carolina's official state music. And the answer to our second question, which of the following is a documented legend about beach music? Was it A, on the 4th of July, the great shaggers would put on cashmere sweaters, dance up a storm, and never break a sweat? Or was it B, the best beach music dancers could put a key lime pie on top of their head, do a drop spin, and never crack the crust? Or was it C, beach music enthusiasts would sometimes shout the lyrics to the song Louie Louie, regardless of the song played by the DJs at the jump joints? Or was it D, all of the above are documented as legends of beach music? Correct answer. Answer A, shaggers would wear cashmere sweaters on July 4th and not break a sweat during their dancing. As noted in SouthWritLarge.com by folklorist Brendan Greaves and M.C. Taylor, titled Beach Music, History and Myth, despite the fact that the myriad musical and social strands that ultimately coincided to give rise to the beach and shag music phenomena are hydra-headed, murky, and ambiguous, the oft-told legend holds that beach music was born at Jim Hanna's Tijuana Inn at Carolina Beach, North Carolina, in the spring of 1948. While Hanna's Tijuana Inn first provided drinking age crowds with access to Black Jump Blues, these anonymous beach establishments provided underage kids with a way to participate with the African-American music and dance that was at once taboo and coveted. Award-winning historian Fessa John Hook explains, in the old stories, the great shaggers on the grandstand would wear a cashmere sweater on July 4th and dance out on the deck at the Myrtle Beach Pavilion with their sleeves rolled up and never break a sweat. Aside from a few shag clubs dotting the Carolina landscape, beach music seemed dead by the late 1960s. In the late 1970s, however, the genre experienced a rebirth in popularity throughout the United States. So let's close out today's program with I Love Beach Music by The Embers. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time. What kind of fool do you think I